tariffs, short-term pain versus long-term gain.
This is Jerry Toome of Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Toome. This is Michael Williams. And today we brought in a special guest, David McCord, to join us. It's always good when we can get him to give some time out of his busy schedule to come talk to us, because I don't know if you two have noticed this week, but a couple news stations have picked up on this tariff thing, and seems to be causing the market some turmoil.
to say the least. Yeah, I mean, so far we're just almost in a free fall right now since the top of the market, and we had one little bounce, and now it's still headed lower. Looks to me like we're starting a bear market, but we're going to come back to that in a moment and talk about it because we brought in David. David's the president of Cornerstone Financial Services. I'm the chairman. But David knows a lot more about the tariff situation and the ramifications of that than I do. So I thought this is a great time to get David on. Michael prompted it to start with, which is that's a good idea. So, Michael, I'm going to throw it back to you, and then you can start asking David the questions, and then we'll roll around to
the other things we want to talk about. We'll get your feedback into it, too, because I don't necessarily think y'all agree on everything, which will be nice and interesting.
Would be interesting, won't it?
All right, so, David, even Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said a few weeks ago that it makes sense to have front-load the pain, which is what it feels like they're doing right now. That's why I was curious. I've been talking to you this week about what is the short-term pain? What is our long-term gain goal here?
Well, essentially, this is like one category out of three in which President Trump, I think, has decided that things need to be different than they are. And all of those are extremely major issues of themselves. So to me, trade is just one of the three things that he's taking on at the same time as remaking the U.S. government and dealing with the budget and the deficit issues, and also the global security arrangements that have been in place since the end of World War II, the whole post-war world order, if you will, to use the old George Bush term. So trade is a big part of that. This is probably the one issue on which he's been the most consistent over, 40 years of saying, we're getting ripped off on trade and we need to do something about it. So he came in and came in big. And despite the fact that it's been very well telegraphed that he was going to do something, the market did not react well, to put it mildly. So as Jerry said, we've been, especially the end of this week, have been in free fall, and we haven't settled out from that. So long-term gain would be, and again, this is, you have to make a number of assumptions. Number one, that his analysis is correct. Number two, that his prescription is correct. And number three, that the execution of it comes out into some sort of balance. But I think his calculation, which I think is largely correct directionally, is, there's a lot more trade pain for other people than there is for the U.S., just based on the fact that trade is a smaller percentage of our GDP than a lot of these other countries. And because we are the ones running the massive trade deficit, which by definition means that the other countries have the surplus. So whether you agree with the methodology or certainly how it plays out, and there are very valid reasons why, there are, I think, valid points on all sides of this, but nevertheless, he's essentially betting his legacy on it. This is a bold move among a series of bold moves. And so whether it all comes together is very much in question at this point, you know, when we're right in the middle of the turmoil. His goal is to bring production back to the U.S., to see that employment come back to the U.S. In his view, this will, you know, balance things out. The rest of the world needs to pay their own way, both on trade and on the global security issues. And those things, again, in his worldview, are going to help us to balance out the U.S. government budget issues, which are massive and do have to be addressed, no question. I mean, you can either try to address it front end, which is what he's doing. And again, how successful he will be is going to depend on how convincing Congress to go along, because DOGE and all of these other things are pretty little headlines, but they don't mean anything unless Congress cuts spending levels from where they've been. We're on target, I think, to spend 7% more than last year, which was the Biden baseline budget. So unless something along those lines changes, you haven't changed the trajectory yet. And also, to answer your question, the pain up front with what Bessent is looking at, I was skeptical about the view that they wanted to tank the market just to get Treasury yields down, because we've got, you know, roughly, you know, the government debt is roughly $36 trillion, and about a third of that has to be refinanced this year, 2025. So that's over, you know, whatever that is, over $10 trillion. And then, you know, we ran a $2 trillion deficit last year. So add that on top and say, if we're roughly in the same range, that's $12 trillion of government securities that have to be rolled or financed this year. And so that's a whole lot of supply into a market where we've seen yields tick down a little bit. And now this week, they've come down a lot. And I think, no, I don't have the source on this, but I think it's one basis point of yield on the debt. It comes out to about $1 billion a year. So we've seen, you know, we're saving a few billion, but of course, the risk is if you tank the economy and the whole system in the process, you end up with a mess. So, you know, we're in the middle of the turmoil. The benefits remain to be seen at this point, but he has a plan and a direction. And right now, that's, you know, we're in the middle of the pain part for sure, or the beginning of the pain part. I don't know. I guess we'll see how long this drags on.
So I've been noticing on different newscasts and things we read that, and people either pick one side or the other, and they are stuck to it, and they only tell me information on that side. What have you been seeing since the tariffs have gone in place this week? Have you seen any companies, any countries actually do any adjustments?
So I think part of the market's issue over the last month or so has been, okay, and there's been a lot of talk about the uncertainty, what is going to happen? Because part of Trump's method, like it or not, is essentially insert chaos into the system and then take advantage of it.
Yes.
And so he is disrupting everything. And what the markets don't like, and certainly what businesses don't like, is uncertainty. What exactly, you know, what are the rules? Tell us the rules and then we'll adjust to that. And so I think, you know, we had the initial talk, oh, that got everything stirred up. And then, oh, well, we'll delay it a month. And so everybody goes, oh, we're relaxing. He's really not going to do it. And we had at least another 1 month. I can't even keep all the details straight don't have those notes on this today. But clearly this week he's like, okay, here it is. And then everybody's going like, wait a second, that's not relaxing anything. This is like escalating everything. And their methodology for how they pulled these numbers out in terms of the tariffs is somewhat questionable in terms of logic. I don't think he cares about that. He's trying to make the point that, okay, we don't like these trade deficits, and we're going to do something about it. So to answer your question again, specifically in terms of what companies are doing, I think now that we have some level of clarity. I mean, obviously, there's still the potential for negotiations and change of direction. So far, we haven't seen that. We've seen China escalate. We've seen tough talk from the other countries for the moment. And again, these things are not overnight fixes. So We have seen, you know, for example, Stellantis, which is the old Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep, I think, mixed in, European company now instead of a U.S. one. But they have production plants for autos in both Canada and Mexico to take advantage of those agreements. And they're saying, well, all that production is shut down. That was a day or so ago. So basically, very quick response to that announcement. The flip side is, and, you know, and there are others, you know, that was just kind of the first headline. So people are not going to, you know, take the risk now that it looks like, okay, we're settled here. They were willing to take some short-term risk of, oh, maybe everything will get negotiated out, but that didn't happen. So you're going to have companies now finally saying, okay, this is where the new balance is. Here's what we have to do to make things work for us as best we can. And that is the one other thing with reference to the markets that's negative is, you know, companies will change direction in response to those rules, but it takes time to do that. You don't build billion-dollar plants and get them constructed overnight and have all of your workers in place. You know, that there will be some of that. Of course, Trump's been very quick to talk about the new investment commitments that he's gotten.
His
but
victories.
Commitments are, again, a headline and not the full execution of the plan. So, I mean, even if those do come into place, it takes time to get that set up. So that's the short-term risk for the markets is you cut those margins and you have downward pressure on corporate earnings in an environment where you've already got now, you're seeing those high valuations in terms of PE ratios come in just from the anxiety and the uncertainty, which makes sense.
So he's getting chaos, which he kind of likes because he takes advantage of it, but clearly the market does not like the chaos.
Exactly. And of course, the risk is there are several levels of it. But the first thing is, in order to make all of the layers of the plan work, he has to continue to have political support because our system, you know, turns over rapidly. They barely have a House majority, and the Senate is really not much more than a simple majority. So in order to get that done, he's got to keep everybody on the same side and agreeing with what else he needs to have happen. And of course, there's a lot of there's a extreme level of difficulty with each one of these things. It's a sequence of events that have to fall into place. So do I think there is a concrete plan? Yes, I do. I don't think he's entirely flying by the seat of his pants, although he definitely likes to throw some curveballs in there because otherwise that's just what he likes to do. But in the meantime, you don't turn the global economy from, okay, one situation, which it's been for a long time, into a new situation. That doesn't happen overnight. I think you will start to see, and you are starting to see, apart from the commitments, you know, they will be rushing to reshuffle things to not, you know, tariffs are incentives or disincentives, depending how you look at it. So companies are going to say, oh, these are the rules. We need to adjust so we have the most potentially positive outcome, and that takes time to do, but you better believe they're moving to do it now. So you'll start to see those headlines, whatever they are. But in terms of, again, the risk, economic risk, short-term, definitely massive disruption, you know, anything, you know, even though trade is not a huge percent of our GDP, it is still, you know, we have to have steel, we have to get it somewhere. You've just placed, you know, if I remember right on that, 25% tariffs on imported steel. Well, U.S. steel production they'll be able to ramp up somewhat in the short term, but you can't build a new steel plant overnight. You know, so all of these things take time. In the meantime, costs go up. So
the bottom line is short-term pain versus long-term gain. We hope he's successful in the long-term gain, right?
And, of course, that's what the skeptics would say is short-term pain for long-term pain is that there's not. You know, so I think, you know, that the case is, you know, ideally and from a classical economics perspective, the best solution or the most efficient economic solution is free trade. The difficulty is it free trade when everybody's not on the same level playing field. So, for example, part of this is a regulatory issue from the U.S., which is we have all of these environmental rules, all of these labor rules, all put in for, you know, good reasons. The question, again, comes down to, are the specific rules really flexible enough? Is it realistic enough in the world we live in? Otherwise, we're saying, oh, these are things are important for the workers and for labor. And so that raises companies' costs to do business here in the U.S. But, oh, certainly, again, to use the bad guys, in his view, the Chinese don't have to follow those rules, but they can send their goods here without, you know, without having to deal with all of those impediments, all of those costs. So what's going to happen in that environment if you're saying free trade, everybody come in, which to some extent that is what's happened with that, is you run a massive trade deficit because they can produce at much lower cost. They don't have to deal with the environmental constraints to the same degree. They don't have to deal with labor constraints to nearly the same degree. So, you know, they're always going to be the low-cost producer. So that's what he's trying to overturn. The difficulty, again, is we're talking decades upon decades of not just, you know, companies respond to what is the policy and we will adapt to that. So this has been a long stand, regardless of administration or party. This has been the status quo. I mean, he's trying to overturn decades of established policy overnight, not just in, you know, like I said, not just with trade. We're going to rebuild the U.S. government and the whole global security system, NATO, and how all that works interaction-wise,
and he's
all in the same time.
Attacking all three at the same time, which is pretty amazing. So may you live in interesting times, the old Chinese proverb.
All right. Well, I do have another question for you. You know, the past couple of weeks in Jerry's special report, which is available on our website, cornerstonereport.com, called Bear Market Starting? Again, you can find that report at cornerstonereport.com. And over the past couple of weeks, Jerry and I have been discussing, you know, with the market action, is this just a correction or is it the start of a new bear market? And so one thing that I think is really good about us is that y'all look at the world of the market from different viewpoints. Jerry starts from the economic macro view down. You start from the markets up. And so from your viewpoint, since we haven't had you on in a few weeks, how does this play? The tariffs, could this be what knocks us into a recession, into a bear market? What are you seeing coming from the markets up?
You know, well, the first thing I would say is in the short run, and sometimes even the intermediate run, the economy and the stock market are two totally different animals, which the economy is driven by, you know, the economic activity, and the stock market is driven by both the economic numbers, but
emotion. On
top of that, layer on liquidity and layer on emotional reaction of people making those decisions.
And leverage.
And leverage, of course, ties into both of those things. So, you know, when you have those things like we're seeing now, most likely seeing leverage unwinding, you know, the margin calls coming one after the other, when everything, you know, during corrections, everything tends to correlate. So, you know, here we were, and I'm not saying this just to pick on the crypto bros, but, you know, here we were a couple months ago, and, oh, Bitcoin is the answer. It's going to outperform gold. It's not, you know, when the market goes down, it'll be, well, it has not been. It's clearly a risk-on, risk-off asset like everything else, or at least it's acted like one, regardless of the underlying, you know, whatever your philosophy is on whether it's worth anything or not. So correlations in corrections, especially larger ones, all tend to go in the same direction. You know, so diversification at the moment is not helping a whole lot, other than, you know, bonds are about the only thing. You know, they haven't been a great diversifier, as we've talked about before the last few times, but at least they are providing a little bit of ballast this time.
And probably gold.
And gold certainly has been, until the last day or so, has definitely been the place to be, the one thing which is, you know, traded on its own, to the beat of its own drummer, which sometimes it does. So anyway, and that makes sense in a world where not only, you know, talk about uncertainty. I mean, everything is getting shuffled around at once. So will it settle down? Yeah, I mean, the markets will do their thing. But the second part of the response would be in reference to the bear market side of it. And of course, how do you define that? You know, if you go with just the 20% number, NASDAQ's already there. S&P's not far, you know, at the rate, you know, of course, extrapolation, straight line extrapolation is easy. So at the current rate, you know, I'll give it another day or so and we're there, you know. But the bigger issue is how long and prolonged will this be? This has been one of the fastest, you know, almost as fast as COVID decline and extremely relentless. So as Jerry mentioned earlier, we had, you know, one very slight attempt at a bounce. And, you know, now we've accelerated fairly dramatically to the downside. So even if we do get, you know, we are pretty stretched in the short term. I think about, you know, again, I don't want to get overly technical, but Bollinger Bands are one of the tools that technicians will look at to see, you know, and they're set to volatility level. So three standard deviations. Bollinger Band, we broke below that, which is, you know, pretty rare. And usually you get a bounce out of that fairly quickly. But, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, spread fear. If you don't, if you get to those extreme levels and don't bounce, then you've got bigger problems. So let's hope that we're not, you know, setting up for Black Monday repeat this week. But,
for sure.
You know, it's definitely... Other than the fact that we're extremely oversold and sentiment obviously has now gotten pretty negative, you know, there's not a whole lot of positive signs out of the market action itself. So really, you just have to, if you're on the sidelines, you just have to wait until there are signs of recovery in order to, you know, from a technical perspective at least.
Last question on this, because we've covered this thoroughly. Excellent excellent analysis, David. Glad you stay in touch with all that kind of stuff. Have you seen anything on how much we're getting in terms of margin calls? Because, again, we know that the leverage was high before any of this started. So the market peaked out, I guess, what, in February? And we know that the margin debt was fairly high. I think it's been higher in the past, like in, you know, in 2000 for sure, it was slightly higher as a percentage of the market. But have you seen any numbers in terms of how bad the margin calls are getting right now? And I know that's changing very rapidly, obviously.
No, not really. I mean, if somebody gets a margin call, they know, but there's not really a report on that other than just following the market action when you see things, constant ongoing liquidation without any break.
That usually,
especially
is
those
tell.
Bigger moves, and just from the context, as you mentioned, of knowing that there's so much leverage out there at this point, that just adds fuel to these downside, the sharpness of these downside moves. So, and, you know, again, without one of the things that's kind of, you know, the whole conditioning in a bull market to buy the dip, there are strategies
right.
literally that are set up to do that. And so what one of the things they try to do is trade volatility by every time it bounces, like, you know, the VIX is the fear measure. We've talked about this from time to time. And so they try to, if it bounces, they try to sell it. And so there are, you know, funds and, you know, things that are set up for that. And so the difficulty is if you try to buy every dip, it works on the way up, but it works in reverse
right.
on the way down, because now you're saying, oh, volatility is high, so let's sell it and make money as the market bounces back. Because volatility, I should define that, volatility in the market tend, and those terms tend to move in opposite directions. And so now, if volatility keeps extending, those people have to reverse those positions so they don't have, you know, a wipeout type position.
Yeah.
And so that is kind of the difficulty where we are at the moment. We're definitely in an unwinding.
Right.
And we can look at levels and say, well, maybe here there's support or maybe there, but really, even technicians will call it potential support, because what the important thing is not the level, it's how things act when they get to that level. And so far levels have meant, you know, other than on a very short term basis, levels have not held anything. You know, it's been down, maybe about, you know, relax for a day or two and then down again. So until we turn that around,
yeah,
it's ugly and looks like usually this type of a decline, you know, you're going to have, you don't heal these overnight. You know, we've gotten used, the last few times we've had some V-bottom type things. This doesn't feel like that at all.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I still remember a friend of mine who's, his son, he was a stockbroker too, but his son worked for, I think it was TD Ameritrade, one of the firms. And he said what would happen, because I remembered at the time you would have the crashes and then they would, you know, it seemed like market's trying to bounce. This is 2008. And then in the last hour of trading, it would just get hammered every day. And he said, well, that's because the margin calls were coming in. So all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're giving you a minute to get your margin in, send us some more money. And they don't send the money in, they automatically liquidate the position. So I don't think we're seeing that yet. But clearly the unwinding of the leverage is a big deal right now. And may you live in interesting times, Chinese proverb. I repeat that too often, but it is applicable right now. Okay. Thank you, David. Excellent.
All right. Well, I wanted to take a small break to remind you how you can learn more about Cornerstone Financial. You can find us at cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. You can learn about Jerry Tuma, David McCord, and myself, and the rest of our team at Cornerstone. You can get Jerry's latest special report called Bear Market Starting? Very good report that's available for you. You can see a lot of things we've been talking about. You can actually go and see those charts. Because, again, sometimes just seeing it makes a lot more sense than just hearing about it. You can listen to previous week's broadcasts and interviews on cornerstonereport.com. And you can find those on our podcast, currently on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Audible. If you'd like to reach out for a free consultation, please call us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. Well, Jerry, I wanted to bring up, with all that's been going on in the market lately, and the good conversation we had with David explaining what's been going on in the market lately, you know, the traditional way that we were taught in schools, you know, when I was getting my master's in financial planning, you got yours, you know, they always teach us, buy and hold is the golden rule. But, you know, if you're buy and hold right now, that means you're going to have to just ride this down as far as it goes. And if you're like my boys in their 20s, all right, they can handle that. They can even add more money to it, do some dollar cost averaging, no problem. If you're near retirement, in retirement, and you're living off those funds, that hurts. And it hurts a lot.
And it can be worse than hurt. It can be suicidal if you're drawing out too much and the market crashes too much.
So what are some alternative ways that people can look at investing that's not just hanging on, just to hang on?
Yeah, and again, I think this is a lot. This is an important point, and we have talked about this recently, but not to the depth that I want to today.
Right.
Because essentially the issue is, and I've talked about William Sharpe, one of the Nobel Prize winners in economics. He had one of his points, he said, his theory was, he called it end period dominance. And so he said, okay, one of the things that happens if you're trying to retire, so this is not something, unfortunately, I haven't seen it proliferate throughout our industry. Our industry tends to talk about the buy and hold methodology as if it is the only way that you can do it. There is no other alternative except to do that. No one can, quote, time the market and all these other slogans you hear, or at least you used to hear. But the bottom line is there are alternate ways to do it. You don't have to ride out every crash. So the problem is, again, if it's going back to our Goldilocks and Three Bears analogy, if it's a baby bear, a correction, those typically are better if you just ride them out. In other words, you're not trying to move out of the market on those, because typically you're going to lose part of your return and not protect your
capital. If you try to move out too often, you're going to miss the upturns.
Absolutely. You'll get whipsawed by the market, where you get out low and then it moves back up and you get back in high. And so that's typically not very good. But what we try to specialize in here and in our service and what we do, again, because part of this is because our clientele are primarily, with just a small number of exceptions, are all over 60. Many of them are over 70. And so the point is, hey, I don't have 20 years to make this back if we have a crash. I mean, the market in 2008, the market, it took 4 years for the S&P to get back to break even. But what was happening, what would have happened if you were pulling money out to live on, systematic withdrawals, which a lot of firms do and have done in the past, And because you can hemorrhage your account. So, the market's down 50% at the bottom, but if you've been pulling money out to live on all that time, you're doing dollar cost averaging in reverse. So, again, dollar cost averaging for the younger people works well, potentially. No guarantee still. Right. But if you buy in, let's say the market's high and it's $10 a share and then it crashes to $5, just to use easy math, 50% decline. And we've seen two of those in the last, in my professional career since 2000 and 2008. You know, if you're buying more in and it goes up again in the long run, okay, you're getting twice as many shares at $5. You put $100 a month in just to make the math easy. If you're putting in $100 a month, then you're getting 10 shares at the top when the market's high. Mm-hmm. $5 a share, you're getting 20 shares at the bottom when the market's low. And you can make the case that that works, and people do that with their 401ks and all that.
But when you're doing it reverse, it takes more shares to get the dollar amount you want out.
So if you are retired, though, and you're taking what's called a systematic withdrawal, which a lot of people do, then you have to pull out twice as many shares when you're at $5 a share, and it just compounds the losses. Mm. They go incredibly. So one of the things that we want to, again, so I did ask David to calculate this before we got on the air, because this is a really important concept. One of the things you want to watch out for are the daddy bears. The mama bears, you can sometimes make your way through. That'd be a 20-30% drop, which I think that's pretty well where we are now. In other words, as we're recording this show, before Powell speaks this afternoon, NASDAQ's down about 20% as we speak. So we're essentially starting a bear market from my perspective now. And it's funny because I still remember when I wrote the newsletter in September, I was pretty adamant about, I thought we were getting ready to start a bear, and probably now a recession will accompany that. And then I thought, okay, I guess I was wrong because Trump won, and now it's like, no, everything's confirming, but it came from a different place. I didn't expect Trump to be torpedoing the economy or the market himself, but he's clearly doing that. The short-term pain for hopefully the long-term gain. But anyway, NASDAQ down right at 20% now, but we don't know. There's not a real easy way to find out how much leverage is in the system for margin calls. That's really the self-destructive thing. But NASDAQ, one of the things that you want to look at to see if we're in a bear market, and I would just plot this on my computer if I were you at home, is where's what's called the 200-day moving average. 200 days, you throw out the oldest day. Every day you throw the oldest date out, put the new date in, and recalculate what the average is.
The past 200 days.
For the past 200 days. The average moves. Mm-hmm. So every day it moves one day. 200-day moving average. When you penetrate that level, unless it's just a brief dip, it's like, okay, if you're sitting there and you kind of, you're next to a swimming pool and you kind of brush your foot across the water, that happens in bull markets. That's not penetrating. When you're diving off the high dive and you're crashing to the bottom of the pool and you're way below the 200-day moving average, it's almost always a bear market, which is typically, usually, if you're going to have a full-blown bear, you're probably going to have a recession. No guarantees. It doesn't happen all the time. But essentially, the NASDAQ is now 13.5% below its 200-day moving average, and the S&P's right at 10. So those are not dip your foot in the water, across the toe across the water. Those are plunging off the high dive. Mm-hmm. What we hope is that it's not a platform the size of the Olympic drop, because that's what could be happening. This is one of the fastest bears that I've ever witnessed in my career. The crash of 87 was the worst one by far, but part of the 2008 market, just once it got rolling, you started the self-liquidation. So part of what's going on is not just the uncertainty about the tariffs. It's not just, are we starting a recession? Those are additive to that. Those are a big deal. But also is how much leverage is involved, because virtually at the top of the market cycle, we talked about this before, John Templeton called it the point of maximum optimism. And when you get to that point, and we've got this in our chart. So if you haven't read our newsletter yet, go to our website and get it. Bear market, what did I call it?
Bear market starting?
You can also read the one that I put in last September and say, hey, I think Jerry looks like he's turning out to be right. He's a little early. But that's always the way it works for me. I see what's further down the road. So David kind of processes from watching the market out. I'm more the macro guy. Makes for a good combination. Let me read you some stats, though. So here's an example of when something that's got a defense built into it works, and sometimes when it doesn't work. Nothing works all the time,
right,
in our industry. Okay, so I'm looking at this. This is from, who is this from, Michael?
Wealth Shield.
From Wealth Shield. And they're talking about the S&P 500 versus what's called a 10-month moving average. I mentioned earlier, 200-day moving average. You throw out the oldest date every day, recalculate, add the new date in, recalculate. This is a 10-month. That's easier to work with than so many days. So it's about the same amount of time, mm-hmm. a little right around there. Okay, so recent periods of market stress. We had an Asian crisis in July of 1997. It ended in January of 1998, so it lasted for 6 months or so. The buy and hold model was down 5.61%. Now, there was a lot of gyration during that time. So we're talking about from the start to the end of that. We're not talking about what it was in the middle.
Right.
In the middle, it was down a lot more than that, probably about 15%. S&P. These are all, by the way, the S&P 500. But again, what happened was if you just rode through that one, didn't jump out, didn't do anything at the wrong, didn't have bad timing, it didn't really help you to use the 10-month moving average during that time. Same happened with the Russian default. Started Russian debt default in July of 98, ended in October of 98. Market was down about 15.38. So it was about the same, both with moving averages, using a moving average, which again is a stop-loss system, versus buy and hold. No meaningful difference. Now, there was a lot of difference in when we were managing the money back then, the way we were doing it back then, we missed most of those declines, not all of it. You're never going to get exactly at the top and exactly in the bottom, but we missed the bulk of both of those declines. I remember some of my clients going, are we in or are we out? Hallelujah, we're not going down in the crash. Of course, those were temporary crashes. Then you got to the dot-com crash, which the worst of that started in October of 2002. If you'd moved out after 10 months, 6.07% decline.
Right, using the 10-month moving average.
Using the 10-month moving average, you had a 6% decline. That is, that's very...
That's manageable.
That's very, very manageable if you're retired. Buy and hold portfolio down 44.82% over that same period of time.
A little bit of difference there.
Yeah, so you're down 50%, almost 50%. The subprime crisis starting in November of 07 through March of 09. Again, if you'd used a 10-month moving average as your stop loss, you're down 4.86 versus a 50.97 on buy and hold. The COVID was short, but it still worked. The moving average... If you use the 10-month moving average, down 8.29, buy and hold 19.63. Now, these are all using the statistics basically from the S&P 500. And so this is not a recommendation necessarily that you do this. This is just an illustration of how this could work in your favor. Nothing works all the time. Nothing is perfect. But that's the kind of thing that we do for our clients. That's why we don't advocate buy and hold. Again, Willie Sutton made a statement once. He was a famous bank robber back in the day. He said, why do you rob banks? He said, because that's where the money is. Okay. Why do we work with people that are retired primarily? Because in most cases, that's where the money is. They've built up their accumulation phase. And it's also the people that can't afford to go through a big wipeout because they don't have enough time to recover. So I mentioned that the time period when we had the 2008 crash, S&P 500 recovered in about 4 years. So, okay, well, that's not fun, but that's manageable. I mean, it's not disastrous. Okay, but that, again, assumes you weren't taking any money out of your stock portfolio to live on.
Right.
If you're retired. So you had enough in bonds or savings or other real estate or whatever, so you just tied yourself to the mast and rode the wild waves. But it would look pretty grim at the bottom, I'll guarantee you that, in March of 09. It was amazing. So the other factor, though, is you can have these periods where they underperform for a long stretch. We may have entered one now. We just don't know. But 1966 was the top of a cycle. It took until 1982 to break even this time. 16 years? Can you ride out a 16-year massive ups and downs with the biggest bear market the second biggest, the second worst bear market other than 2008 occurred in 1974. A lot of the darlings of the day, again, were down 80 to 90%. So the issue is there are bears and then there are bears.
Right.
And you got your mama bear is where I think we're at now. But the question is, are we going into a grizzly, a male mama, a daddy bear? And that's yet to be determined. I don't like the way this one started. I'll put it that way.
Well, to kind of summarize, so we use what we call tactical money management here. We don't do buy and hold.
Right.
And the main purpose is for defense, because, again, our clients are basically living at least on a portion of these funds.
Or they're retired. Even if they've got enough money, they don't have to live off of it. Right. You still don't want to experience that when you're 70 years old.
They're looking to pass it on, and they want to keep that. And so our systems, again, we don't try to get out on every little downturn, because then, yes, you will miss out in the long run. We agree there with the academics. But at a certain point, it becomes too big, and it's just more. You sleep better. You have better, you can have better returns. I can't guarantee anything. But if we have on the bigger drops, those mama bears, the daddy bears, if we have an alternative way, we don't just ride it out. There's different things. We have different managers that have different techniques of doing this that we combine to make what we call our buckets. You know, some have hedge strategies. Some just move to cash. Some look for other parts of the market that may actually be working while the majority of the market's going down. So there's just different ways to go about it. Again, not trying to miss the little bitty downturns, but trying to protect against those big ones.
Right. If you try to miss all the little ones, you miss most of your return, because you get what we call whipsawed.
Right. And I'll say our clients have been happy this week. You know, we're not getting a lot of calls about, hey, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on. We're actually getting calls saying, hey, looks like everything's working the way we expect. So that's a good thing.
Man, that's gives you this. I didn't mean to make today's show a long infomercial, but I think it's instructive to understand the different types of money management that is available, because again, you don't have to go with the lemmings and go off the cliff when you have a big bear. The question is this going to be a really big bear or just a mama bear? And the answer is, we don't know yet. I will say at this point, at the speed it's going right now, it's looking more like a daddy bear than a mama bear to me. But we'll see. It might be a 30-35% decline and not a 50% decline. Right. It's too early to tell. So that's the whole thing about risk taking. Are you willing to ride it out? And part of the problem too with this, Michael, is what we call with the behavioral finance part of it. Because we know from economic research that people dislike pain of loss 2.5 times more than they enjoy the same amount of gain on average. That's multiple academic studies have gone into that. Essentially, Why Smart People Make Big Money Mistakes is a book written back in the 90s, but it was an excellent book, and it covered all this with the behavioral finance side of it. But the bottom line, as I said, again, the average person hates loss. Now, some people are more risk averse and some people are not. We have some people that are almost afraid of their own shadow in terms of their, I don't want risk, I don't like fluctuation, etc. So we have to make portfolio accommodations for that personality. Have other people, my son is not, is an example of this. He set your hair on fire risk is the only way he wants to do anything. He's very impatient, he's very confident, and more power to you. Okay, but that's different. The vast majority of our clients are not going to be that way because they've gotten older. They have most of them retired. And so a bottom line is not only the end period dominance thing, in other words, if you're retired and you start taking money out in a big bear, that's really can be disastrous. But the other factor is playing into your emotions. How much are your emotions going to be playing in? So here's normally what happens in a bear. In a bear, you have the first stage is called the recognition phase. And I think that psychologically is where we would be today. So in other words, people are now going, oh, the Trump tariffs are now looking, we were hoping, market was hoping, and I'm not saying me as in we, like us. I'm saying the market and or participants in the market were saying, well, I'm hoping that Trump's not going to be too destructive, and surely he wouldn't do that. And so, he uses negotiating.
I guess they were assuming there'd be another 1 month reprieve.
Yeah, and he's done that in the past and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, well, we're anticipating it won't be a worst-case scenario, and it turned out to be close to a worst-case scenario at this point. The EU is not about to back off, and China is not about to back off. I mean, this, okay. I can make the case this is a negotiating strategy from Trump. That's the way he does things. Mm-hmm. As David said, he likes to keep things stirred up and uncertain and chaotic, and he plays into that, which I understand. At the same time, I don't think those two powerhouses, economic powerhouses, are going to play ball. The other ones, okay, you want to stomp on Mexico's feet or Canada? Okay, that's a different story. The smaller countries are probably going to capitulate into whatever Trump wants to do. But he's talked about, you know, the rolling out the tariffs. I mean, you're talking, what, 30 countries that to one degree or another are going to be affected by this, at least, if I'm looking at the chart of the whole thing, the table of it. This is a lot of chaos. It's a lot of chaos. So you've gone from people expecting, if you look back, and James Stack identified this, you know, last week, if you look at the average gain that Wall Street was expecting for 2025, looking at a survey, he did a survey of every single brokerage firm out there. What was their stated number and what they thought the market would do in 2025? The median gain was 12%. You had highs of 20%. Gain for the year, as one brokerage firm meant, and I'll leave the names of the brokerage firms off. You had one that was only a little over 1%, but the median was 12. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've gone into this environment, and again, this is what happens at the top of cycles. Everybody is on one side of the boat. Everybody's very bullish. As Templeton said, this is the point of maximum optimism, where everything looks great, and everybody's assumed it's great, and again, very few people look very farther down the road than one or two calendar quarters. And I will also say, you know, I didn't expect Trump was going to be this rambunctious. I didn't think the bull in the china shop in him would be this disruptive, because I knew that would be counterproductive for the economy and the market in the short run. But by golly, he doesn't seem to care. You know, he got shot in the ear and he said, fight, fight, fight. I'm like, okay, well, he's definitely going there. He's taken everybody to the mat. He said, we're going to fight this out and work it through. But again, in the short run, that's very disruptive to companies with CapEx. They want to build factories or whatever. And even if they make a decision, as David McCord pointed out, that's probably going to take 2 years to get there. So are you willing to wait 2 years? How long is this crash going to last? I don't know. But I will say right now, economically, what you're going to see is we had solid economics in Q4. We had solid economics in January and February of this year. March, it began to slow down and change. April, I think the bottom's going to fall out of the economic world, because they're going to go, wait a minute. And the point is, typically the layoffs don't start immediately. That's not the front end of the recession. So again, it reminds me of an analogy I used last, I think, September or so. If you can imagine, if you're at the State Fair of Texas or Six Flags Over Texas, and you're in the very front car of the roller coaster, when you first get to the top of the hill, you're in the front car, there's nobody in front of you, you get up to the top of this first great big hill where they take you all the way up the hill with the little clink, 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 clink motor rotor that's taking you to the top, because that's where you're going to get your starting point, where you get all the momentum to do all the rest of that stuff. And so bottom line is, you get up to the top and you're in the front car and you're looking over the hill going, whoa. But you don't go fast at first. You go very slowly at first until the back half of the roller coaster has topped the hill and gone, oh, and then you just take off like radical. So to me, that to me is a good analogy of where we are now. I think we've passed clearly. The rest of the roller coaster is now on the downside of the hill. That's not debatable anymore in my view. If you look at the market and if you look at the pattern, if you look at where we are, I believe we've started a bear market, and I believe it will probably bring a recession with it by the third quarter. Maybe not in the second quarter yet. Maybe it starts in the second quarter. We'll probably have a small smidgen of negative GDP in the first quarter of this year, according to Atlanta Now GDP, but I think that's partially distorted by all the front running on the tariffs and all that. So that might or might not be the actual recession starting, but I think the second quarter this kind of a crash in the market over this short of a period of time emotionally will affect a lot of people, and not to count, as David pointed out, the margin calls. Margin calls, that's one reason, as we know, the market, the old saying is the market climbs on an escalator and goes down on an elevator. Part of the reason for that is, number one, the emotions. As we mentioned, the studies have shown the average person, and I know nobody's exactly average, the average person hates loss 2.5 times more intensely emotionally than commensurate gain. So the emotions are much higher. But the other problem, and the bigger problem in my book, is the leverage is out there. So when everybody's at the top of the cycle, as Templeton said, the point of maximum optimism every cycle, then they're leveraged out the wazoo. And when that leverage starts unwinding, it compounds everything, and that brings even more fear. And as it goes down, that brings even more margin calls. And so you have this compounding effect of more fear, more scared, more margin calls, more fear. It goes lower, more, and it just it reinforces itself on the way down until finally you hit a bottom. I don't think we're anywhere near the bottom right now. It looks to me like we've just gotten started.
Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Again, cornerstonereport.com.
Jerry Tuma Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services, an independent financial group, LLC, or unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.